has done is create this monolithic representation of trans women as hyperfeminine, as cisgender assimilation. Whatever, trans women and trans people in general are diverse and are not a monolith. Transgender women can choose to present their gender in a variety of forms that does not negate their womanhood. So a lot of the policing occurs if a person doesn't neatly fit into what you think a man and a woman should do, right? And so we have to push back against these oppressive norms. And we see this evident, honestly, if we think about gender birth reveals. That's just another way to reinforce gender prior to a child being here. Also, this refusal to allow people to access bathrooms and play sports is another ways in which we create this vigilantism, as well as these anti-trans laws being passed that don't allow people to choose their gender, to choose their pronouns, right? These are ways in which we are recreating gender oppressive norms. And these are just not things that are being recreated for trans people, but also being recreated for cis people. We know that there was an incident in Kelowna, BC, in which a 9-year-old child was accosted by a grown man who demanded to see her genitals because he didn't think she should play sports there because she wasn't considered to be a girl. She happened to be cisgender, but as we can see, this vigilantism happens to hurt everybody. And so we have to push past this. And so we know that a lot of Black trans women, because they lose jobs, because they're not hired, live in poverty. So it's important for us to think about how to contribute to this. One of the organizations in BC, Q Community, does a really good job of contributing to the lives of trans people. In particular, they allow you to sponsor fundraising events. So if you know of some particular organization who can sponsor a fundraiser event, this is a great opportunity. They also allow you to donate clothes to individuals. So they have gender affirming clothes, right? A lot of us may get rid of clothes and we may go to Value Village and these other thrift shops. I beg you to give the clothes to these particular organizations, right? Trans people deserve to feel beautiful. They deserve to feel seen the way they want to be seen. And as we know, life is very expensive. The average trans person, Black trans woman, makes about $10,000 a year. That's nothing, right? And so it's important for them to have resources. And so when you participate in organizations such as this, we make sure they actually get what they need versus us passing laws that don't necessarily get to the heart of what they need. So if there are some spring cleaning coming up, please, please, please reach out to Q Community and think about donating any of your clothes or any of your shoes to those individuals. Also, when we think about these responses, we have to think about how can we help them heal. We have to think about accountability, this idea of resilience, and this idea of safety. And so what that means is that we have to protect Black trans women. We have to trust Black trans women. A lot of Black trans women's word is not taken. A lot of times when they put out that they've been harassed, that they are going through these things, nobody takes them seriously, right? But we have to learn how to trust trans people and to trust that they know what they're talking about when it comes to them and to their bodies and to what they need. And we also, like I said, have to support them by making sure we are building spaces that allow them to thrive. And so we have to ask ourselves, how am I contributing to the harm of Black trans folks? Because you're either part of the problem or part of the solution. Neutrality is not accountability. You cannot be neutral and be accountable for these particular things. And you know, doing research to learn more about this particular topic is important, but contributing directly to Black transgender people is much, much better. And so if we think about what it means to be accountable, make sure you call out transphobic rhetoric. Studies have shown that when it comes to trans people feeling safe, people have stood up for them with family and friends, people who respect or support them, people who use their preferred pronouns and their correct name shows them by calling this particular thing out. Be aware of how systems work, right? So in particular, when the judge made the call that the trans woman had exhausted everything in the United States, that shows a failure to really understand how that system works, right? And so we have to understand how these systems are working to disadvantage Otherwise, we may assume that trans people are ahead. We may assume that trans people are getting the things they need. But in reality, if we look at the way the systems are working, we can see that they don't actually work for trans people. Also, we have to question our role in the system, right? How are you, like I said, a part of the system? How are you contributing? Part of my way of questioning my role is to make sure that my research talks to actual trans people, right? I've done interviews with Black trans women in Surrey, and I've learned that for them, they have received family support, but they're still not comfortable in public spaces. They don't like riding our transits. They don't feel safe when they're shopping, right? And so this is up to us, because cisgender people are the ones that make them feel unsafe. And we also have to make sure we do something to make an impact, right? Like I said, making sure if you are giving your clothes away, you're giving to these organizations. You are thinking about volunteering for these organizations. These are, like I said, more important than passing laws and talking to politicians, but to make sure individually we are making an impact. And just to close, I just want to say that Black trans lives do matter. And this is a quote from Lena Bloom, who appeared on the Sports Illustrated cover. She says, "I don't know any queer or trans people who are harming people, but I know they are the ones in body bags. I know they are the ones being killed, being murdered. They're the ones in society who are killing themselves." And so solidarity should be informed, intentional, recurring, and a sustainable act of service. It is on cisgender people to make life livable for Black trans women. Thank you.
Well, thank you ever so much. That was, for me, there were so many elements of what you spoke about that really resonated. One, I think I've often assumed that visibility is a good thing. And just to challenge that notion and to think about hypervisibility was really helpful for me. So thank you for that. And I guess the other thing that really stood out for me is the call for accountability and for us to be thinking about how individually, not just fixing the system, but the ways in which we are also all accountable. So before we get into the questions, please join me in thanking our speaker. So Victoria, get comfortable.
I will. I just don't like these sheets.
Exactly. Gather our papers. I get to ask a few first questions. I'm really curious about how you got into this research. What's motivated you? What's the story that brought you to do this really important work?
I think for me, we were kind of in the point of the transgender visibility, but then I started noticing that when I was searching for these things, I was seeing a lot of deaths. Then I was like, well, how many people could there be? And then I started to do the math. I was like, wait a minute. This is a very small population, yet all I see is their deaths. And so then I started to ask myself, why is this occurring? Why do we have one of the smallest populations being murdered at a very, very exponential rate compared to others? And so that got me involved in looking at what is contributing and what is creating this, as well as where can I intervene? And so that was important to me to think about, how is this happening? Why is this happening? And what can I do to prevent this from happening? And so then my research kind of took off from there, and I thought maybe I would go somewhere else, but then every year the numbers just kept ticking up and ticking up. And so then I was like, this is a real systemic problem that I need to dive a little bit deeper into to find reasons why and find a way to stop it.
And it's so compelling also because you are in the School of Communications to also take that media lens to it and to think about how we're perpetuating stereotypes and violence actually through media representations as well. So how long have you been at this work for?
Since 2013.
Wow, yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah, so it's 10 years. And like I said, when I look back on the 10 years, the media representations have grown exponentially. Like I said, my first book project is looking at television shows. So I think there was 29 television shows from 2013 up until 2023 that featured Black trans individuals and non-binary individuals across 400 episodes.
Wow.
And this is across Canada, the UK, and the US. So I'm trying to figure out across those 400 episodes, these 10 years, what have been the main messages and how have these main messages kind of proliferated a lot of this anti-trans hate.
Interesting. You've been busy,
yes.
I have to say. You've been very, very busy. And even in the last 2 days, you've had a few back-to-back events. I was hearing about the other event that you recently had on trans youth and anti-sexual orientation and gender identity movements. So I'm just wondering, as a researcher, and sharing the work that you're doing, what's that been like for you?
Well, part of my job is to be publicly engaged. So I'm very lucky that part of my job is to make sure that I speak to the public, to make sure that knowledge moves beyond the academy, right? Yeah. And in particular, if I think about Black trans women, very few of them will make it to the academy.
Yeah.
Thinking about living off $10,000, getting to these places. And so my job is to make it to when things do change, that they walk into the academy and there's space for them and that they are treated well and that they are respected and that they are deemed to be important knowledge producers of our particular society. And I think the ways in which they take care of each other can teach us a lot about how we can take care of each other as well.
That's fantastic. And I understand you had close to 800 people online for the event the other night on trans youth.
And, that was good.
Fantastic. Yeah, absolutely amazing. Yeah. I mean, it's so important. And have you experienced backlash in the work that you've done? Or what's? I'm just kind of curious about that, because I think we're feeling it, right?
Yes. Like, I would say that when I first started this, the backlash was, this is not important, this is not going to go anywhere. And I was like, no, something's happening. So the idea that trans people weren't important or that trans people are new, I think that was the backlash. This idea of trying to explain to them that trans people have always been here, trans people are important, was kind of the first. Now I'm starting to see the backlash just being the lack of wanting to actually hear.
Yeah.
The lack of wanting to listen to trans people, right? This idea that because I've either seen politicians talk about trans people, or I've seen trans people on the cover of Sports Illustrated, means that they're taking over the world and we have to stop them. So the backlash to the hypervisibility, I definitely think has been very, very ferocious, as Laverne Cox said. It's been very genocidal. So I have definitely seen the more and more we have these conversations, the more and more we speak out for trans people, it seems like it's not necessarily getting better. And so that's why I think us moving away from thinking about these systems is very important.
Yeah, no, I really appreciated that point that you made about it being individual responsibility and to be really thinking a lot about the everyday ways in which we can make a difference and be allies and be supportive of Black trans women. So you made a few suggestions. Are there other ways in which you think, you know, as people leave tonight and think about their roles, other things that we should be thinking about?
So there is a documentary that was released called Kokomo City. It was produced by a Black trans woman, and it features four Black trans women in there from Atlanta, New York. Sadly, one of the Black trans women was murdered before the film came out, so she'll never see what it did and what it could do. So I definitely say look for films that are being produced by trans people so you can actually hear from them. So that is a good film, and that film will be featured at the Social Justice Film Festival next week in Vancouver, if that is something you want to see. But I know you can also get it on probably Apple TV. So by watching that, by paying for it, one, it teaches media companies that these are stories that we care about.
Yeah.
These are stories we want to see. And it increases the exposure to make sure we have trans people not only just in front of the cameras, but also behind the camera.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Okay, I'm already sensing hands are coming up. And there are already questions online. So I'm going to kind of go back and forth this evening online into the audience.
So you've been talking a lot about how sort of media perceptions and hypervisibility has affected the way we've seen trans lives be negotiated in the public space. And I think around the transgender tipping point, social media hadn't sort of fully come roaring into force, and that was a lot more of top-down media depiction. How do you think that internet spaces and internet discourses have intervened and changed the conversation in how this hypervisibility manifests and affects Black trans lives?
So I think we can once again go back to thinking about the pandemic, right? And 2020, so that was a lot, like I said, a rise in, it was just us and our screens. And so if we think about the ways in which social media in particular, companies are not beholden to some of the same laws, also don't necessarily care about protecting people as much as they care about making profit. We could definitely see like a lot of online spaces have become super toxic. Part of research that I'm working on now with support from the Digital Democracies Institute is looking at hate speech that is being pushed by a particular anti-hate group in America, as well as the ways in which that group has made coalitions with US politicians. And so that's what I mean by the system. If we have these very select few people making these laws and they're collaborating with these hate groups, then we're not going to get there. And so I definitely think the proliferation of social media has contributed more and more to that harm, because people are able to get to trans people, I would say, quicker if they can't meet them in person, right? They're able to either have them doxed, they're able to put out their addresses where they live, they're able to get them fired, right? And so that particular space has also created a lot of hypervisibility in which audience members can create more problems beyond the system. So I definitely think that has increased, and I think we'll see more and more of that as we think through how to make these spaces safer. But I definitely, once again, like I said, that's going to come down to laws that I don't think are ever going to get at what we need.
We've got a question online. As I said, I'm going to go back and forth. Hi, Dr. Thomas. Thank you for your talk tonight. I'm curious about of your thoughts on Canadian post-secondary institutions' responsibility, role in countering violence and oppression of Black, transgender, and gender non-conforming persons.
When it comes to thinking about the role of an institution, one thing I try to teach my students is that institutions are run by people. Right, so a lot of times people say, well, the media is doing this. No, there are people who are working for the media that are doing this. And so when I think about the role of institutions, I think we have to come back to what is the role of each professor? What is the role of each staff member? What is the role of each administration? We can, like I said, come up with all these policies. We can have all of these particular formats. But in reality, the only way to prevent this is for every single person that works in a system to be aware of how the system works and to do better, and not think that it is the administration's problem or that it is a problem that a system is going to fix, right? We have to think about individually, how am I making this space better? And a lot of that can just come into the ways in which we teach, right? Part of the ways in which I teach, my students read things from trans people, right? One of the articles I had them read is from a disabled trans woman from Vancouver, who's Indigenous, who talks about how she's been let down time and time again by Vancouver systems. So having them understand that they need to hear from that particular individual. And so I think it's up to the people in the institutions to do the work and not expect the institution or some grand body that we don't know of to be passing all these policies that people may or may not follow.
Yeah, it's such a good reminder, I think, to not think of it as the institution, but to think of it as people trying to do work. Yeah, it's fantastic. Scanning, yes, we have a question here.
Thank you for sharing your knowledge. My question is about the position of elderly women who come out later in life. And what role do they play in supporting the younger generations? Because they're also grandmothers group, which I know there is a film where they support the trans woman. I can give you the title. But and then the second question is about Africa. Do you go to any parts of Africa, and is there any solidarity between trans African women and Black women in North America?
So the first question, the first question is about elders. So a lot of my research, I haven't been able to talk to a lot of Black trans elders. One thing that is important to note is because of the disproportionate rates of violence, a lot of Black trans women don't make it past 35. And so that's kind of what the elders look like, right? Of course, there are people who make it, but very few make it past 35. And so they are even lacking elders because the elders aren't making it. And so I think if we can, we push back against this and we're able to stop a lot of this violence, there will be elders for them to provide support. But a lot of these Black trans women only have each other, and they're very young, trying to survive a system in which they're being murdered, like I said, at a disproportionate rate. As far as the second question, I haven't necessarily seen too many connections. A lot of my research in particular has been focusing on the North American context, in particular the ways in which Western ideas of gender norms have created this transphobia. So I haven't really focused a lot on that, but some of the trans women I have interviewed who live in Surrey, they have immigrated here from places like Nigeria, and they have talked a little bit about the ways in which being here has been safer, but yet they're still experiencing some problems. Thank you so much for that question.
Yeah, thank you. Online, we have a question. How can we hold media accountable for their role in perpetuating the rising transphobia, further putting Black trans women at risk?
So I think, once again, like when we think about media, we want to remember who are we talking about, right? Who were the people who are writing these stories? Who are the people who are producing these stories? And so some ways to hold them accountable is for us to be a part of that media. One thing I teach my students is that I pray you all are the one who are writing the next TV shows. I pray you are the ones who are gonna change the way the news reports about these individuals. So part of what I do as a professor is to hopefully know that the students that I'm teaching are gonna be the new writers, are gonna be the creators. And also we know a lot of our students now are content creators anyway on TikTok. So making sure we take away as much power from mainstream media and continue to put out counter narratives, I think, is the way we hold them accountable, right? It's easy for the media to just say trans people are great, but then I can say, well, no, that's not true because these are the things. So I definitely think us pushing more counter narratives and us pushing more, I would say, narratives from trans people, right? We have great people at SFU, like Travers, who's doing research where they are discussing and talking with trans people. And I think that's what we need, more people who are making sure trans voices become the voices you hear when you think about trans people. And that's kind of why my research is focusing on television shows, because the majority of people who write for television shows are cisgender people. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to figure out what are the stories they're writing. What are the things that they're imagining? And if we make those spaces more open, then we have more trans people writing, right? And we know Pose gave that, but that's one show. And that show is over with, and it's probably never going to come back, right? And so now all of those people who work for Pose don't have jobs. The writers aren't working. And so once again, we see this economic displacement happening.
The other phenomenon was this, was cisgender people playing trans roles as well. I mean, like, what is going on there, right? Unbelievable. Yeah. Questions in the audience? Anyone checking in? Because there's more online. Yeah, Stuart.
Thank you, Victoria. That was fantastic. One of the brilliant things you commented on is the way trans violence and hatred is echoed in a culture of vigilantism that's around us today. And I wonder if you can, I want to think about this in a way that is not so filled with sadness and sorrow. And I wonder if that culture of vigilantism, which I think is in our public domain in ways that frightens many of us right now, including in governments, in states, for instance, that we've seen in Canada in recent weeks. And I wonder if you can share with us a little bit about how younger people are responding to that culture of vigilantism, what they're saying, how they're pushing back against it, how they're feeling it in their lives.
I think in this mediated world we have, the recordings, the whatever, I would say that I want to be hopeful, but I'm also more realistic than idealistic. And so I worry because a lot of these particular images, this policing, right? We have people who will pull a camera out and record you. And so in particular, the hate group that I am tracking, they don't create any individual content. What they do is they find trans people and then they take their content, they post it on their hate page with derogatory words. And so even now, if a trans person decides to post something for trans people to help them out, to make them feel safe, these individuals could find that, these individuals could post it online, these individuals can push it. In particular, there is a trans drag performer here called The Girlfriend Experience. She was on Canada's Drag Race, but she's been even doxxed by Republicans in the States, right? So why do Republicans in the States need to be taking images of Canadians to prove their point? And so I worry that the more and more that they become visible and more that they create this, that it's easy for these huge Republican machines, right-wing conservatives to take their information and make them less safe. And so I think the vigilantism in particular, the idea that regular people will see a trans person and send it into this hate group shows how people are really picking up on, it is my job to tell somebody how to live their life, and if they don't do it right, I'm gonna make sure the entire world knows and that they are humiliated and that they are not feeling as if they even want to post, right? And if we get to a place where trans people stop feeling safe to post, then once again, those narratives are gone and all we're seeing is the hate narratives.
Again, online, thank you so much for taking time to educate the participants. I'm looking forward to sharing what I learned with my elementary school colleagues, which is fantastic. Thank you, Anonymous. Is data on the Canadian trans population as available as U.S. data?
Yes, actually, the Canadian data, I would say, is more accurate. A lot of the data I got are from particular organizations, like the Williams Institute, that does that tracks data like I do. But the Canadian government actually has trans identity on their census. So there's actual data tracked by the Canadian government about trans people. And like I said, a lot of the numbers I have are from organizations and not the actual government. So yes, you could definitely find statistics on trans people in Canada.
Do you think it's better in Canada?
I mean, we always like to think we're better, but I'm just kind of finding myself, you know.
I would say,
I mean, we don't have as many weapons. I mean, that helps.
That's the thing that I think was really important about the woman from Colorado that wanted safety. It was really about the gun rights.
Yeah.
And the judge ruled that that didn't play a role. And so I think safer as far as violence and death, definitely. But as far as jobs, no. Trans people here are still struggling. They're still not working. They do have access to healthcare, but as we know, that could take a long time. We also know we don't have enough doctors, and I'm sure the doctors we do have are not trained a lot in trans-affirming healthcare. So I don't want to say that things are better as much as I want to say maybe things are less violent.
Thank you.
And thanks so much for listening. That was, again, a lecture made possible for us to broadcast by the folks at SFU Public Square. That was Dr. Victoria Thomas from the School of Communications here speaking about transformative justice in and as it relates to reducing anti-trans sentiment. You can find links to more information online under Intravenous in our program schedule by date. Again, thanks so much for listening, and stay tuned for Democracy Now!